Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and joining me today is Jeff Faddick. Hey, Jeff.
How you doing?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's been a good long week.
Jeff is in the evangelism group, DX, same as me, and you're in the field in St. Louis.
I am.
And you are one of the world's foremost experts on IntelliTest now.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
This is a brand new feature.
Right.
But right now, you are.
That's right. That's true, I guess. That is true, yep.
Now, a couple weeks ago, we did an overview of Visual Studio 2015. Dimitri Leyland and I showed some of our favorite features, and I did a very quick demo of this.
Okay.
At a very high level, but what you're going to do is you're going to teach us way more about it.
Yeah.
What is it? Why was it invented? What problem does it solve? How does it work? And what the heck is it doing?
Right, right.
Which is the most interesting part. What exactly is this thing doing?
Yeah, so in a nutshell, what we're doing here is really helping you generate and get started with unit tests.
Mm-hmm.
There's very few features that I can think of, if any, that really are both a quality feature and a productivity feature at the same time. So we all know today that unit tests are more important than ever in an agile world. So we need to be able to quickly start them up, do what we can. Well, of course, we'll have to tweak some things, but we'll be saving ourselves a ton of time and increasing our quality.
Cool. So this feature used to be called Smart Unit Tests.
It did. And there's most of the content out there still says Smart Unit Test.
Okay.
So be careful with that.
Now it's IntelliTest.
Yep.
It's a feature of Enterprise.
It is.
And let's see it.
All right, let's dive in. All right, so I've got a fairly simple text calculator library here. It doesn't have a UI, so it's a little harder to debug and troubleshoot than other things might be where I can actually see results coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an API that I might give to other teams so they can do text calculations. All right. So the first thing we'll do is we'll look at this calculate method that I want to test. And we'll right-click into this. And I'll do a peek. Lo and behold here, it's actually an interface, so this doesn't tell me a ton. So again, we'll right-click. And we will go on to code map, another cool feature. And in just a moment here, it'll give us a visualization of this class. So there's our iText calculator. You may not know much about the solution, so you could use CodeMap for that, but I actually know enough about this to know where this calculator is. So we'll just jump into the HRA exemption calculator. And so this is the derived type from iText calculator and has a definition for the calculate method. Now you can see this calculate method has lots of parameters coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And it has several logic branches. This if, for instance, and then a little further down, we have a switch case with three different options, and then more ifs, et cetera. Maybe not the most complex logic you've ever seen, but for this particular set of code, you'd actually have to write unit tests for each one of those logic branches.
Right, there's a fair amount going on, and all of it needs to be tested.
Exactly. And these aren't hard unit tests to write in this particular case. They're fairly simple.
But wouldn't it be cool if you had a tool that did it for you?
Exactly. All right. So let's dive into that.
Or at least got a good, healthy start.
That's right. So we'll close our peek window here so you guys can see the code. And we'll just right-click anywhere within this method and say run IntelliTest.
Now, there was a choice above that to create unit tests,
yes.
Which just creates an empty unit test project. It doesn't actually write any unit tests for you.
Right. It gives you a little shell to start with, but it won't go do all the magic you're about to see. So it did a build real quick behind the scenes here, and then it's crawling through, and I'll talk more about that in a second. It's crawling through our code and giving us all the different logic branches and a test for each one of those.
Okay.
So this is pretty cool, right?
It discovered seven logic branches or seven things it needed to test? What exactly is that?
What it basically does is try to achieve code coverage by default. The default behavior of IntelliTest is I'm going to go through the code and try and generate a test that gives you maximum code coverage.
Okay.
So it may be, in this case, seven tests, could be 20, whatever. It doesn't mean that you've tested every scenario. It doesn't mean you have all your domain logic and business rules that you want to add to those tests, and you probably will.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to crawl through and find these things that you may not think about.
Okay.
You may not have thought of seven different scenarios. And so you can see they're just tests. Over here to the side, it says test method. So each one of these is a different test method. And what it's doing is passing in different values to get through those different logic branches.
Okay.
So to get through the first if, I may have to have a 300 value. But to get to the else statement, I may have to have less than 300, something to that effect.
Okay.
It shows you your results, so this is important. This may be where you say, I'm surprised that this returned a result of 360, and that's, although it says passing test here, I need to go tweak the logic and change how this works. At the end of the day, they are just regular tests, like I said, so if I select all, Control-A, or we'll just shift-click, apparently. There we go. And save. It will also generate, over in Solution Explorer, a test project.
And it saves each of those as a test?
It does, but there's a little nuance to this that I should probably highlight. So if I click on the Tax Calculator test file, there's actually only one method in here. And it's what we call a parameterized unit test. So this is the way in which to call our method under test. By default, it's really just a fairly simple call to that method. But you can see down here below the to-do, you could add your own logic. Maybe you want to call it a certain way. Maybe you want to stand up some set of classes a certain way. Or even add in your own asserts to test these to the results.
So there's one method, and then it's run seven different times?
Great question. So there's, like I said, a little nuance to this. This is a partial class.
Okay.
So scroll just off the page there. There it is. And if I dive into this a little deeper, yes, that's fine. You can see a lot more code here.
Okay.
And each of these is the corresponding test that you saw in that data grid.
Okay.
But each of these does just call that parameterized unit test. So you see this dot calculated exemption for
that. And it passes in different parameters.
You got it.
Okay.
You got it. In this case, the very simple employee null iTax calculator null.
So this one is testing what happens if you pass null for employee or null for iTax
exactly.
calculator. I'm predicting that's one of the ones that failed.
Yeah, that's the first one that definitely failed. Doesn't like that. We'll talk more about that one too down below if I can skip this.
Is there anything to the 395, 469? I mean, are there 468 other versions of this?
Yeah.
Are those just random numbers and can you control that?
Yeah, they're basically random numbers and
okay.
you shouldn't care.
Okay.
You know, there's a talk about making these a little friendlier, smarter names, but the complexity this could get to is kind of intense.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Lots of different properties might come in. So right now we just use this as a unique identifier
okay.
so that we can sync these later. This is the more realistic unit test where we're actually creating a house and an employee and then setting the particular values that we want
mm-hmm.
so that when we call calculate exemption for rent, we get the results that we're expecting.
Okay.
So there's seven of these total, and that's what gives us our test. And just to prove that as well, we'll come over here to Test, Windows, Test Explorer. And in just a second, we should see our seven tests pop. Whoop, hit build there, just to
right,
make sure.
You have to build.
Yeah.
All right, so there they are,
there's our
seven
tests.
And
okay. if I select all those and run them,
you would presumably get the same results.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I had two failures
mm-hmm.
and five passing, which corresponds to our IntelliTest results down here.
Okay.
So two failures, five passing.
So now to fully understand what each of those tests are, you go look at the code and
yeah.
see what happened?
Yeah, it could be, okay. again, that your test is wrong and you mm-hmm. want to tweak some assertions or assumptions. Or it could be that your app is actually wrong, your app logic, and you change those. So it's not... it's not meant to run IntelliTest as a replacement for running your unit tests. You might generate all of these unit tests and then just run them over and over as you change
mm-hmm.
your logic.
Okay.
You'd only run IntelliTest when you wanted to have it go crawl your code again, right? So now go find out, I've changed the code so dramatically, do I have more than seven scenarios now?
Right.
Something like that.
Okay. So you would run these tests over and over again, potentially.
Yes.
But you wouldn't need to rerun IntelliTest unless you needed to regenerate
right.
the tests themselves.
Yep. If you wanted to keep something in sync,
right.
maybe you, oh, and we can do it here, actually. So let's do one example. So we mentioned the assertions and assumptions. So let's come back into this guy. And we won't need this window. So here we're coming back to the parameterized unit test. So one of the important things here is that the parameterized unit test is where you can make changes as a developer. The auto-generated tests are going to be auto-generated potentially over and over as you run IntelliTest. So you don't want to make code changes over there. Make sense?
Wait, you just
yeah.
lost me. What's the difference between the auto-generated and your test?
Yeah, so the parameterized unit test actually gives you a prompt here, a to-do, where you can add assertions or otherwise manipulate how this method is called.
So the auto-generated one is that base one?
Yeah, the other, longer set of code with all the individual unit tests.
Oh.
So these guys.
So those ones you leave alone.
Yeah, these you leave alone.
Oh.
Yeah, because okay. So, they'll potentially get updated over and over. So back on our parameterized test, though, we can change the behavior here and actually put in something like pex assume. So there is a an
pex
SDK.
Is what? This is what this used to be called?
Yeah, so great question. So pex is the underlying engine we use to crawl the code.
Okay.
So it's how we're generating the unit test. IntelliTest is sort of the, think of it like the UI wrapper, the Visual Studio integration.
Pex has been around for a while, hasn't it?
It has.
Microsoft Research production.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. So it's been around a long time, never been productized or supported until we included it with the IntelliTest.
Okay.
So pex assume is our introduction here, and we'll say is not null. And we'll say, look, we're going to pretend that employee. And calculator, for our example for now, that both of these won't be null. We know that because we're controlling the calling code, or we have validation on the other side, whatever it is, we know that these guys aren't.
The other thing, of course, you could do is, in your original method, handle the fact that somebody might pass null.
And that's probably the more correct way to handle it,
right?
And you should be able to say, if null, throw an exception,
right,
or what have you.
Okay.
Yep. Here's our assumptions. Now watch when I run PEX again, or IntelliTest again.
Both of those should pass now. I believe those were the two errors, right?
Yep. Just a second. There we go.
Is there a lot?
All right, so this is perfect.
Okay. Right, so the null one, was testing both of those?
Yeah, so it was actually passing in both a null employee and calculator.
Okay.
And so what it actually did is actually we're down to 6 tests now. Because that test no longer makes sense to run. There's no point having a test where null comes in because I told IntelliTest that won't happen.
Is the test, but the test is still there, it just doesn't get run.
Nope, we've now eliminated that test as a
scenario. If you said create IntelliTest, right, to recreate the test, that test would still be there?
It's not actually. We've already, by running IntelliTest here, we've actually removed that test from our bank of tests. Because it's no longer a valid scenario.
I see, okay.
We're telling IntelliTest that you can't ever get null.
But you tell it that in the test code, not in your base code.
Right.
I see, okay.
Right. Now, you can use code contracts and other things, or like you said, you could add code, like if logic, to if null, do something. Those are all possible scenarios as well.
Now, so one follow-up to that. If you took that assert out and ran IntelliTest now, would it automatically add the test back?
It would.
So every time you run IntelliTest, it recreates the test.
Exactly. It keeps them in sync with whatever
changes.
And
so the difference between running and just creating is creating doesn't run the test, but run always creates.
Yes. Yep.
Cool.
Yep. So if we come back in here, we'll show you another behavior, another option. Let's say that I don't want to assume this, because as you mentioned before, probably not the best scenario. And we'll come back to our calculator. There we go. And we'll rerun until test again. So we'll be back to 7 tests. So it's going to regenerate that one. The other 6 tests, because they're not changing, they'd still be there. They don't get changed.
On a large project, does the fact that it has to rebuild all of the tests add a lot of overhead?
No, so you can only really do this at a method or class level.
Okay.
So you can't like right click on a whole project or a whole solution.
Okay.
And there's reasons for that. When it generates your tests in these most scenarios, the 80-20 rule, you won't have to do anything to tweak things. But when you get larger, more complex scenarios and lots of business logic that you have to understand yourself, then IntelliTest can't just know for you, you'll have to go in there and tweak those things.
Okay.
So if you did that at a massive level, you'd have a lot of work to do.
So if you created tests in another method, do they wind up in the same project, separate project?
By default, we put everything in the same test project.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Yep. All right, so my null test is back.
Right.
Because I removed those assumptions. But let's say now that a more realistic scenario, whenever a null employee or calculator come in, I actually do want it to raise this exception. I want to tell my calling API or calling applications that null reference exception should be raised.
Mm-hmm.
And although it's failing now, I want to tell IntelliTest that actually is the correct scenario.
Okay.
I want it to do this. So we have another option up here. It says allow. And if I click this.
Is that considered a best practice, though?
Yeah, it's, you know.
I mean, it's great because you're not on the hook.
Right.
But do you really want to write APIs that
throw
ever
exceptions.
Blow up?
Right, yeah, you really don't.
Okay.
But there are scenarios where it makes sense to say, hey, look, I need to tell you that you're doing something you're not supposed to be doing.
Right.
I can't control the scenario.
Okay.
I can't know. You know, as a accessibility, easeability, maybe you don't want to do that very often, but it'd be no different than maybe passing back an error code, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't crash the system, but I give you a 102, but your results are irrelevant and,
right.
and don't okay. help you at all. So there's some architecture style to this for sure. All right, so now I want to fix this. I said allow, which what that does, just so you guys can see it, there is a PexAssembly info class in here where we can control the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we use different attributes on our methods, like PexAllowed exception here, where we're saying this is actually okay to get a null reference exception. Now, this is potentially dangerous, as you're already indicating. There's, you know, maybe you don't want to have exceptions come out, or I'm allowing all null reference exceptions
all
from anywhere
right.
in the stack.
Right.
That's potentially a hazard as well. So you have to understand how this stuff works before you start
yep.
just turning things on. Okay. But now if I rerun that until a test, it will get a slightly different scenario. There we go.
So it doesn't have a keyboard shortcut?
It probably does.
It wasn't listed.
No. All right. Yeah, we should get our results. So now it's the same test. The null's coming in, but now it's passed.
So it passed because it's okay.
It's okay.
Did what it was supposed to do, which is blow up.
Right.
Okay.
Right. My business logic or rules are saying that it's okay to do that.
Got it.
Yep. So there's all kinds of things you can tweak in that sense. There's, like I said, an SDK where you can get to really control the behavior of IntelliTest
mm-hmm.
and the underlying PEX engine.
Right.
All right. Do you want to learn a little bit more about these issues?
Yeah, but I also want to ask another question.
All right.
So you and I are on a team. We're working on a project.
Yeah.
You and I differ on what we want in our tests.
Oh, man, yeah.
You run IntelliTest. I run IntelliTest. Is there a possible situation where you and I can conflict on the tests?
I mean, I guess, you know, when each of us run IntelliTest, we'll get the same results. So it will generate the same unit test results unless one of us changes the behavior.
Right.
Right. So you added in PexAssume and I added in allowed exception.
Right. Instance. Because that was failing. And I said to you, hey, handle, it's we got to do something about nulls. Handle nulls.
Yeah.
And you say, ain't nothing wrong with that.
Right.
So you assert that
right.
there's nothing wrong with that. And then next time I run the test, it succeeds.
Yeah.
And I think it was because you fixed the problem rather than just kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, so and you know that scenario would exist without IntelliTest as well,
true.
Right? If you're just
true.
Doing
okay.
unit testing. What I love about this is that because it's all error generated, I know the stuff's still being handled.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody is doing something in
right.
here.
Okay.
And I would argue that unit tests are a great form of documentation, right? That I can go look at these things
right.
whenever I want and say, oh, well, this is how this person thought it was supposed to be handled and understand
yep.
their look at their perspective on things.
Okay, cool.
Yep. But it doesn't mitigate all conflicts.
it just gives the possibility of creating new and more interesting ones.
Yeah, potentially, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, better than not having the test at all.
True.
Right?
Yep.
And in which case you assume one thing and I assume another.
Right.
Nobody knows. All right, so in the issues here, I think this is a good way to understand more about how the IntelliTest engine overall behaves. The first one here is object creation.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the IntelliTest is telling me, look, I'm making some assumptions here. I don't know inherently how to create an employee object, but that was one of the parameters we need to pass into the calculator.
Why?
Why
it's
doesn't
the,
it know?
It's in the project.
Right, yeah. So it's telling you,
right?
I'm assuming this is how we create an employee. So if you're okay with how it's doing it, the default behavior, then you don't have to do anything here. You just say, this is great, allow it, I don't want to do anything. But if you don't like the way, then IntelliTest.
Because it, maybe it's being created by a factory somewhere,
exactly.
And it doesn't necessarily know. So you've got an employee class.
Yeah.
And then you might have a factory in there that's not necessarily called employee factory.
Right.
And it's not going to look at every single one of your classes to find a potential employee factory.
Right.
It's just going to say, look, unless you tell me otherwise, and that's the question, how do you tell it otherwise?
Yeah.
I'm just going to create it based on the class. I found a class called employee. I'm going to assume that's okay.
Yeah, I'm going to use this default constructor.
Okay.
Right. It may have many constructors, but I'm going to use the default
one.
So
I would actually argue that guest is the wrong word here.
Yeah. There is this. There is some tweaking we're doing to the UI.
It's assuming. I'm assuming.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So there is some
UI
language.
Okay. Got it.
And you'll see that actually in the next update of Visual Studio. We're changing a lot of that. So we assumed on employee. Now, one thing you probably new to you right now, though, is house. I don't remember that coming up anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that employee has a property, a complex type, house. And
okay.
So it also needs to know how to create that.
Right.
So we can set some values, and so it's showing you that here.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say this is not, I don't like this. I don't think you made a good assumption.
Yeah, what if you do actually have an employee factory?
Yeah. So we're going to fix this instead. And what it's going to do is add two factories.
Word that I would take issue with.
I know. We're working on those. Same feedback here. Same feedback.
Modify.
Yeah. Yes. So under the factories here is the employee create, where you could then call whatever logic you wanted.
So these factories you already had in here?
No, I just generated. By hitting the fix button, it created them.
Oh.
If I didn't,
oh, really?
If I liked the behavior, then I don't need to do anything.
So is that then a way for me... Let's say I have employees and houses, and I'm told you shouldn't create classes directly. You should use a factory.
Yeah.
I come in here and I get IntelliTest to make my factory for me.
You could definitely do
that. Oh, that's awesome.
You could definitely do that. And this is where you could modify the behavior,
okay.
Or if you already had an existing factory.
That's a great way to learn about factories.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. So you can override any of this you want. It is auto-generated in a sense, but we're not going to overwrite you. It's yours now to do
it. So where do you point it to an existing factory?
You would just change this code here.
We
stub out some stuff.
Got it. All right.
Yeah, but you can wipe all of that out, so
okay. No
problem. So it's an assumption, though, that we think is important to let you know.
And then it's interesting that the factories are created in the main solution, not in the test.
It actually is in the test.
You can't see
it very well. Let me shrink the references node. That'll help a bit.
Oh, okay.
So it is in the test project.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right.
A little hard to see in our squished. But again, you can overwrite this.
All
you
right.
can add things. You can go nuts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if it's using the wrong override constructor, what have you.
And this would be a way for you to enter test data.
Yes, you could enter test data here. Sure.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's hard-coded or potentially parameterized
right.
in some sense.
Yeah, maybe even one scenario came up the other day is, I know for a fact that the salary always has to be a positive number.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to make sure this thing is always zero. And you can do stuff like that as well.
Okay.
So, all right. Next issue, which I think is pretty interesting, is our runtime warning. So we talked about the ITAX calculator at the beginning and how we had one derived type, the HRA exemption calculator. Now, in my case, I only have the one derived type, and so that's what it's assuming that it's going to use.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had many derived types of that interface, all of them will be listed here. And by default, we would use all of them and generate tests to cover all those different scenarios.
Okay.
If you only wanted one or two of those, you could select them and say, nope, just want those. Suppress the rest, and we'll just generate tests for those.
Okay.
So,
cool.
So another good thing we do crawl a little deeper. And then we get into the limitations here and testability, which are fairly similar in this particular scenario, where we're looking at things like, hey, be careful, you're doing some floating point arithmetic, just realize, you know.
So these are more warnings?
Yeah, they're more like warnings.
Okay.
Yeah, we call it issues right now, but we're changing again that UI.
Okay.
So. Okay. Then if you ever want to get back to your tests, you'll simply change
So what are the 28 blocks, 18 runs, what does that tell me?
That's a great question. So we actually do a bunch of passes of your code. So if I come back to that calculator, which is back up here. So So remember all the if conditions and switch cases and stuff. So we actually, the way the PEX engine, the underlying PEX engine works, is it actually crawls through your code and looks for these different logic branches.
Okay.
And each one of those pieces are inside of there. There are several blocks. So block of code, block of code, block of code. And we crawl through and create that. We count it, show it to you. Probably doesn't help
is
you
a way to see what they are?
No.
I mean, what if I looked at my code and I counted 16?
Right, right.
And it told me 18.
Right, yeah. So there's not really a great way to tie those two together. All right. And that might be some good feedback for the team, too. But we just basically, as we're crawling through it, we're counting them.
It's not because I want to make sure it's right or that I'm right, but it's, I mean, it's a way of better understanding what this thing is doing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, it did 18 blocks. I only see 16. It clearly did something. I'm wondering, you know, how many that I missed.
I mean,
this is, again, as a way of understanding it better. And then potentially, presumably, understanding how your code can get used, right?
Yeah.
Because this thing is making, is taking the time to make assumptions about how this code can be called.
It
you
is.
Just wrote it, right? Yeah. So that's actually, that would be interesting information.
And like I said, there's a whole SDK under here. You know, don't go too deep and throw everybody off, but there's a SDK that lets you change the behavior of a lot of things. Right now, what we do is look, by default, we look for minimum code coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So I make sure I hit this block, and then an isRented is true, which would be the next down here, and I make sure I hit every one of these blocks.
So then people could write their own IntelliTest variants using the SDK? Is that what?
Well, what you can do, not you can't write your own variants, but we can tell you can tell it to change the behavior and say, rather than trying to achieve the minimum number of tests and maximum code coverage, instead, forget code coverage completely and give me every possible scenario and variant of the code, which is a lot more tests and a lot of overlapping tests because we're going to exercise the same code over and over again.
Right, okay.
But you have that option
to
change that behavior. I actually like the default. Getting me code coverage for most of the people I work with is already a huge step forward.
Right.
You got me to 100%. I've been at 20 for 10 years.
So. Right.
So really, really great way to get going.
And then go back to the IntelliTest exploration results. 28 blocks, 18 runs. We know what the asserts were.
Yeah.
Presumably, if you added those two back, it would tell you there were two.
Yep.
And then 18 runs tells me what?
How many passes the engine had to make through to get to these tests. So it basically does a discovery phase of finding out how your code works. And then it runs back through and says, all right, let's go through our different structures now and find out what tests we create. And in this case, it took 18 passes to get to the maximum code coverage, minimum number of tests.
Do I do anything with that?
Completely irrelevant to what you meant to do.
All right.
Which is why we're going to change that UI.
Okay. So it's not like I want to get it down to 16 or I want to get it up to 25.
Right.
25 is not better than 18.
Right. And we don't want you changing your code simply to try and maximize that number.
So, okay.
Yeah. Good questions. All right. So one question I get a ton around unit testing is how do I handle dependencies? Mm. So I call databases, I call web services, all these things. This is a little trickier. So if I open up the tax record class here, I've got an example. Let me save and close.
Yes, I'm interested in this because when I was preparing the demo for a couple weeks ago, I tried a couple existing samples that call services and whatnot, and I couldn't make heads nor tail of what it was telling me, so I just went to a very simple example.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a repository pattern, obviously, what we're doing here. So I have a interface data access layer, and I have this method here that calls the property HRA of my repository.
Okay.
And let me scroll down just a bit. It's a much simpler logic. So if the value is over zero, we're going to return true. If the value is less than zero or equal to zero, then we'll return false.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty simple. So again, we can run IntelliTest here. And we'll get a couple of tests. With one of them, at least one of them, having a problem. There we go. So we hit our false result. We had trouble getting to the other result.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not good. So let's look into this a little bit deeper and find out what that HRA property is actually doing. So we're going to go up to our DAO. And here you can see we're actually depending on file.
Okay.
So we're not doing a database call or web service call, but same result, I have a dependency. And this config.data has to have some value in it that we get back that returns the HRA value.
Okay.
Now, this is a problem because when it comes to unit testing, I'd have to ship this config.data file to my build server.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted to test multiple scenarios, I'd have to have multiple config.data files on that server. That's a problem. We can't do that. And then changing these things underneath, they're all stateful. So I put out a config.data file, and then you put out a different config.data file. Now my tests behave differently. So that's a problem. So we want to make sure we take care of this scenario as well. So we'll come back into IntelliTest. And we will go to our object creation. And fix. So we'll get our factory again that we were talking about before. So again, our tax record factory. Here is where we could add code that says, hey, mock this out. Don't call into the config.data file. You could use fakes. You could use MOQ, Rhino mocks. Doesn't matter. It's your code. Right? But you can now fake out how it calls into
could
that.
Could you use an actual config.data file that is part of this project? You could do that if you
sure.
wanted to.
Sure, yeah. As long as you didn't need multiples of them.
Right.
You know, same name kind of thing. But sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
anything you wanted to. So you could, like I said, usually we'll do fakes and we'll mock this guy out.
Right.
There's more to the SDK where you can actually tell it, hey, don't hard code a value out of HRA, which you would normally do with maybe with a mock or call another source.
Okay.
Instead, let PEX go assume that, because I know I have to have a value over 300, I think it was, and less than, and PEX will use its own engine to crawl through and find those values for you.
Okay.
So you can use that again with whatever mocking frameworks you prefer.
Cool.
Some things we're talking about in the team, we'd like to see maybe have it auto-generate some of that mocking logic for you, and then you could swap out still your own stuff, but at least would save you a few steps. We'd like to see, obviously, more user experience UI work. There's a lot going on there. And then I think the next big sort of hurdle we're looking at is different language support. So you know, we get a lot of questions, what about JavaScript? What about C++?
What's your thought for things like JavaScript, F Sharp, C++?
So it's just going to come down to, honestly, priorities. There's a lot of work to be done because we can't use the same exact engine.
Right.
We don't have the MSIL and those other languages. So we'll have to do a lot more
work. So would TypeScript be easier than JavaScript?
I think that the way the team's looking at it now is those two would be equal.
Okay.
But we'll figure out how to do that. I have a lot of C++ devs that would kill for this. So lots of legacy code, not written well to do unit testing, right?
Right.
Not using interfaces as much, things like that. So this could really help them a ton.
Yeah.
Obviously JavaScript as well, but there are good unit test frameworks and things like that for them. So
okay.
We'll see how that all prioritizes out. The other question that comes up a lot is, what if I don't like MS tests? Jeff, everything you're showing me is emitting MS tests. Well, we also support XUnit, InUnit. You have to download those adapters, and it only works with the RTM version of Visual Studio 2015.
Where do you plug that in?
So there's a Visual Studio gallery, and you, well, I don't have to
well,
go find
that's where
it.
You get them, but where do you tell IntelliTest to use them?
Right.
Is that
so
just in settings?
In the RTM version of 2015, when I would go emit the test, do that save feature, you could actually choose, hey, don't do it as MS test, do it as XUnit or if those adapters are loaded.
Right. Okay.
So,
oh, that's cool.
Yep. Some people really prefer those, and we want to support that.
Sure.
So.
Awesome.
Good?
That's excellent.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Hopefully, I mean, I really like this feature. I think it
this
can really
very,
help.
This is very, very cool.
So,
and
good.
Now that we understand a bit more about what it's doing, it's really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Hope you enjoyed that, and we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.